You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 186, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. Is it 9 years or 10 years now, Ben?
10 years. Yeah. No, I shared with somebody. You missed it. I got over it. It's fine. But yeah, whole decade, man. Imagine being sad once. Could never be me. Will never be me.
Never had a bad day. 10 years. Benjamin Solak. Ben, brother, how you doing?
Oh, I mean, everything is delicious. I'm home for the week, so I'm back in PA. I'll be driving through Philly on my way to DC, actually, which is... staying over with a friend and then flying out of DC. So I don't make a Philly stop on this trip, but it is nice to be in Pennsylvania again and see things on the horizon, you know, like shapes, elevation, changes. This is not the far-stretching horizon of the Midwest, that's for sure.
So you've come home. Raheem Mostert should come home, which we're going to talk about later in the show.
Transitions!
Well, we're not going to talk about that yet. First off, I mean, this is like the big news in Philly right now. So the Deshaun Jackson saga continues after his sharing of a fake Hitler quote, and that's fun, and several apologies later. Also, Alshon Jeffrey, Marquise Goodwin, and Malik Jackson, Malik being the most vocal in terms of his defense of Jackson and Farrakhan, who Deshaun has promoted, which I vehemently disagree with and is the entire reason I'm so skeptical of those apologies from Deshaun. Also, what's going on is Deshaun liked a post stating that he shouldn't have had to apologize, which is the opposite of what the Eagles have asked him. And according to NBA player Steven Jackson, the Eagles threatened to cut Deshaun, which he claims is more than what the Eagles did to Riley Cooper when he found himself under fire for some particularly disgusting and racist language, and we all know what that was. So there are a lot of layers here, and seeing as this particular part hasn't been addressed on this feed yet, Riley Cooper, okay? So Steven Jackson said that Deshaun shouldn't have to apologize if Riley Cooper didn't have to. And I want to work through the timeline of how that went down back then. At the time, the Eagles condemned Cooper's use of a racial slur. Cooper issued an apology. The Eagles fined him an undisclosed amount of money. What happened next was Chip Kelly and the organization had Cooper go to sensitivity training. They decided to keep him on the roster. And then he had a breakout year with over 800 yards and 8 touchdowns in that next season. Then the Eagles extended him. So I wanted to clarify the timeline because it wasn't like, oh, he said the N-word. And then a week later, they extend him. And I'm not excusing it, by the way. I'm just clarifying the timeline. I'll also note that two notable players in that locker room at the time vouched for Cooper in Michael Vick and Jason Avant. Yeah. My opinion of that is that in 2013, black players did not feel comfortable using their voices in the manner in which black players are using them in 2020, and it's not even close. And that's its own problem that may have contributed to the support of Cooper by those players. And I hope that we've seen a significant shift in that regard, like in the last 7 years. And to be fair, there were other players that did say that their relationship with Cooper would not be the same. But even that, I think, is a rather light statement compared to what would have been said for the reasons I just mentioned. And that's frustrating on its own level. Ultimately, the Eagles handled the situation poorly, in my opinion, and they set a flawed precedent. Does that mean that the Eagles should have cut Cooper? I don't know. But Steven Jackson's portrayal of that situation is just factually incorrect. Now, does Cooper not being cut mean that Deshaun Jackson should not be cut? No. Should Deshaun Jackson be cut? Again, I don't think so. Those two things aren't related to me. If you put a magnet on your own moral compass to excuse bad behavior due to past instances of bad behavior, you're never going to get anywhere. All you've done is lower the bar to the point where all is permitted. That does not excuse how the Eagles handled Cooper, which again was wrong, but the Cooper situation happening 7 years ago does not exonerate Deshaun. And you have every right to be upset with how the Eagles dealt with Cooper and how a section of the fan base banged the table for him and pretended to know what was in his heart with no possible way of knowing. But this is not and should not be, oh, my neighbor kicked a dog and got away with it, so I can go kick a different dog and be free of consequence. So where I stand with this right now is this is obviously, like I said, an ongoing saga. There are a lot of layers. There are a lot of different players getting involved. Here's where I stand. Racism against blacks should not be tolerated. Racism against Jews should not be tolerated. As I said, right now, I don't believe Deshaun should be cut. But he cannot continue to fan the flames without the Eagles at some point saying that when you speak or tweet or Instagram, etc., you represent the Eagles. Represent the Eagles in a manner that does not tolerate racism and that takes accountability for your actions and that shows that you're genuinely about unity for all races, or we might have to make a decision and that means you might be cut. Whether Deshaun meets that criteria to a level that's satisfactory for the Eagles is not my decision. That's on the organization to decide. But personally, I'm disappointed in how all of this has gone down and continues to unfold, and I'm disappointed in the rationale that some have applied to this fiasco. The main takeaway, of course, is courting Hitler is insanely stupid. Ben, yeah. Anything to add there, or should we just get on with actual football?
No, I think that, right, number one, if your organization is handling hate speech from a player in the same way in 2014... or the same way in 2020 as they did in 2014. Was it 2013 with Cooper?
2013, yeah.
2013. That's bad.
Yeah.
Whether, regardless of what happened in 2013, good response or bad response, if they have not changed the procedure, changed the people that they turn to for guidance, changed the public face of that, and the private work of that, then in the last 7 years, there's been a lot of work that's been done that's fallen on deaf ears here. So I think it is very important that Deshaun is not taken within the light of Cooper. So that's one. Number two, this is really, really terrible. And this is really, really sad for so many levels and in so many ways. And it's disappointing because, as with all things, it feels like you make one step of progress. The awareness of the Black Lives Matter movement in the NFL, the awareness of the blackballing of Colin Kaepernick, the willingness to do more, and then you uncover a new problem, which is what is apparently a rampant, a widespread, a generally accepted anti-Semitic view among black athletes in the NFL and in the NBA. So it's disheartening, it's frustrating, and it's scary. That which applied previously in the times of black athletes saying that we need to have more respect for black lives and for the struggling of black lives applies currently when the Jewish community asks that black athletes have a greater understanding and willingness to accept the truth of the struggles of the Jewish community and their perils in the past and in now, which is be silent, listen, be merciful, and learn. So again, if you start by saying because of Riley Cooper, I'm not interested. And really, even if you start with, well, because of Black Lives Matter 3 weeks ago, I'm probably also, again, still not interested. Deshaun said something terrible. A lot of people told Deshaun he said something terrible. He apologized for it publicly. There are reports that he apologized for it privately to the leaders of the organization, Howie and Jeffrey Lurie, both of whom are Jewish. And there's reports that he's going to do further work beyond making just a public apology to make sure that he understands why what he did, what he said, what he shared was terrible. That's what's happening. Let it be. Hope that Deshaun learns. Hope that through Deshaun learning, Steven Jackson and Malik Jackson, Marquise Goodwin learn. That's the power that we have. So be quiet. Be merciful. Be supportive. Try our best to be understanding.
Well said, Ben. So with that, let's move on to some actual on-field football. Ben, you wrote an article for BleedingGreenNation.com asking the question, should the Eagles trade for 49ers running back Raheem Mostert, who is seeking a trade because the 49ers won't budge on paying him, equal or around equal to the other higher paid backs on their roster, including Tevin Coleman, which is something like $4.5 million is what he's reportedly seeking. And the 49ers, by the way, currently lead the league in their expenditure on the combination of running backs and fullbacks with $20.2 million on the cap this year at those positions combined. That's a lot of money. So you can see
how much of that is Juszczyk.
Yeah, Hughes is making some money, brother. And he's a doggone good football player that you can utilize in the passing game, so I don't hate it at all. Mostert himself has 2 years left on his deal. He is set to make $2.5 million this year. Per PFF, he led the league in broken tackles during the 49ers playoff run to the Super Bowl, also led the league in the regular season in yards per carry with 5.6 a tote. Ben, super talented back that I'd love to see as a 1-2 punch with Miles Sanders and as part of a committee with Boston Scott as well. But the Eagles may have to wait for the price to drop either from a trade compensation front and or the financials, because those are obvious hurdles to clear right now. And as such, in the poll in the article that you wrote, 76% of the fan base had voted no to trading for Mostert because, I mean, what are we, Bill O'Brien? Come on. So, Ben, your thoughts on this possibility?
Yeah, so we start with this conversation. How much would you trade for and then pay a running back who will not be your primary running back?
Right.
With no names and no situation attached to it. That in and of itself is like, well, I'm not sending much. Like, I sent a fifth for Jordan Howard, and Howard was my running back one for a period of time. And I think Howard's had a more productive career to this point than Mostert could claim to have, even with Mostert's success at the end of last season. So we're talking about a five. We're talking about a six. We're also going to bring, like you said, $2.5 million onto the cap in order to do this. And the Eagles' objective for pretty much since we learned that Corona was going to screw with future years' caps has been to not spend money, right? Like, Brandon Brooks goes down, Matt Pryor, you are up. Yes, Larry Warford is on the market. Yes, Matt Person was on the market, but we can't be out here spending money, right?
We want to roll over as much as we can of, I think it's $24 million in cap space right now to limit.
Right. The Eagles are second lowest in the NFL right now in cap space for 2021, in that they are currently $50 million over the projected cap ceiling. That cap ceiling's projection accounts zero, none, not at all, for any lost revenue for coronavirus from the 2020 NFL season. I'm here to tell you that there will be lost revenue from the coronavirus for the 2020 season. So you expect an impact on future years' cap ceilings, as the cap ceiling is tied to the revenue of the league, which means that the Eagles could be more than $50 million in the hole, and very likely are more than $50 million in the hole. So they got to start making planning as if they're going to be in legitimate cap hell, not like the cap hell that Howie Roseman finagles his way out of, actual cap suffering.
Right.
For at least the next couple of years. So, Mostert, who is asking for more than the $3.5 million, I believe his request was to be at least the highest paid running back on the San Francisco roster, which is currently Tevin Coleman making like $4.9 million. So, Mostert's looking for at least $5 million from San Fran. Even if Philadelphia were to trade for him, they would not want to give him a pay bump. And they're not in a position to give him a pay bump. So, the money is almost insurmountable. Now, if we pretend that's not real, Raheem Mostert's a pretty good fit.
Great fit, yeah.
Right, yeah, for sure. I mean, the special teams ability and the background, which Eagles fans already know about from his time here in 2015, means that he can stick on the depth chart with Boston Scott and Corey Clement, both of whom are also special teamers. He's got, as we saw, explosiveness. He can run outside zone stuff. The Eagles might be incorporating more outside zone because they brought in Rich Gangarella, who was Kyle Shanahan's passing game coordinator and does have some of that wide zone background to him. And now he's an offensive assistant with the Eagles. And so if they want to use more of those running concepts, and I wrote about all of this, how much of the Kyle Shanahan offense will the Eagles steal? If they want to incorporate more of those running concepts, they know Mostert can be good at them. Whereas like Sanders and Boston Scott and Corey Clement, they don't really have a ton of experience running those ideas. So it would make sense from a scheme perspective. It would make sense from a talent perspective. I would guess he would be running back two over Boston Scott the moment that he stepped in, and that would be his job to lose. So scheme fit makes sense. Football fit makes sense. Yes, the Eagles need another running back, or at least they think they do. The fact that you would have to give a pick to pay a guy makes him less enticing to me than a guy you would just have to pay, namely a Devonta Freeman or a LeSean McCoy and Isaiah Crowell, who you could probably even get like Crowell or LeSean under the $2.5 million that Mostert would be even without the pay bump. Doesn't seem likely. Fits good. Very happy for Raheem, who I wanted the Eagles to keep on the roster in 2015.
Yeah.
Hope that he gets his money from San Fran. Not sure that he will.
This is the most leverage he's had ever?
Yeah.
And it's like none.
Yeah. Well, it's very funny because like his agent in the tweet was like, this, he led the NFL in yards per carry, right? And it's like, he did. And it's funny because Mostert's had four seasons in which he's had like one carry, right? Like he had like 17 carries last year. Yeah. Didn't lead the NFL in yards per carry then, but the one year he's got like 100 carries, he's like insanely efficient, which is not how that usually goes. So yeah, Mostert was the Matt Breida of last year or this year, right? I mean, he was the guy that Kyle Shanahan in that system made to look like a really good runner, and you don't blame him for trying to get his money now, but you also don't blame San Francisco for being like, we can make more of you, because Kyle Shanahan's done it in the past, and he's probably going to do it again. So, understandable that they're at an impasse there. I would love for a stupid team to trade for Mostert and pay him some money, not because Mostert's bad, just because that's not generally a good team-building procedure, just because I like Raheem Mostert, I want him to get paid.
Yeah, I agree. You can root for him and also say, maybe we won't go down that road. I just realized two of the past three shows, we have spent a lot of time on the running back position. Which is the...
Yeah, because they matter, Mike.
Do they? I don't know.
Yes, no. I will just say, like, you know, I as you very well know, I'm not 100% on the let's give Miles Sanders all of the touches train. And I'm also not very well on the, like, Boston Scott's a proven running back two train. So I would not... I'm very in on this idea of adding more talent to the running back room. I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
I like Raheem. I would love for it to be Raheem. I just, the Eagles cap situation is suffocating right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely prohibitive. So we'll see what happens. I doubt the Eagles make a move. It would be nice, but it all depends on the compensation, both from the trade aspect and from the financial. So when we come back here on the Kist and Solak show, we're going to focus on something that does matter, which is analytics. And we're going to see how the Eagles offense stacks up against the league in their leveraging of those analytics. That's coming up next here on the Kist and Solak show.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we are back here on the Kist and Solak Show, episode 186, SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation, bringing it to you. Michael Kist here with Benjamin Solak.
Mike, I have something to tell you.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
I realized something today.
Oh, boy.
Analytics, right? Mm. What do they tell you to do on fourth down?
Go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Well, this year, college football conferences are trying to figure out whether or not to have the season in the fall or push it to the spring, right? And the Ivy League has decided to push it to the spring, first conference to do so. And I saw an article, which was like, they've decided to punt the season. And I realized this is the first time the analytics says to punt.
Ben.
The analytics here being, you have 60,000 new cases. This is bad.
A record.
And the decision being, should we go for it, should we punt? And they punted the season. The analytics say to punt. Somebody tell Bill O'Brien, this is the best news he's heard forever.
I'm telling you, man. And yeah, it's going to be weird with the NFL too, which is something that we're going to have to talk about soon in terms of, you know, the different measures they're taking for safety and all that, and whether or not we think the season's going to go off as planned for the 17 weeks. So that's something that we do have to talk about soon. But it's, in terms of actual analytics, when it comes to the on-field play, Hayden Winks of Roto-World had a great article today that ranked every NFL offense for their use of analytics. There were several categories that went into this, including like fourth down aggressiveness, play action rate, pass and run rates in certain situations. And the list really isn't that surprising if you've been paying attention to the organizations that are investing heavily in analytics. For example, coming in first were the Baltimore Ravens, and they've stocked their cupboards full of nerds recently. This ranking is despite having heavy, heavy run rates on early downs and while trailing, which are considered negatives, but are obviously more justifiable when you consider why they run with Lamar Jackson.
The Ravens had the first run offense that had like a positive EPA in like years or something, right? So like even the running is analytics supported.
Yeah, it's just the construction of their offense, and it's very successful, so it's hard to argue with it. You know, that's the outlier right there. They were also first in fourth down aggressiveness, first in shotgun run rate, first in middle of the field pass rate, first in play action frequency, third in pre-snap motion, and so on. So they scored very well in a lot of different categories that affects this ranking. So again, no surprise there. In second was Andy Reid and the Chiefs, which is to be expected. Third were the Patriots, which if you don't think Bill Belichick is just trolling when he brushes off analytics in his press conferences like he's never heard of them before, this guy, I really think that he's been at the forefront of this movement for a long time, and as such is one of the trickiest when it comes to other coaches trying to nail down his tendencies, because he flubs his own offense's numbers all the time just to mess with people. At fourth and fifth, you have Sean McVay and Sean Payton, so Rams and Saints. McVay would be higher, but he's a coward, as we've noted before, coming in 26th in fourth down aggressiveness. And then you have the Eagles and Doug Peterson at sixth. So let's kind of break down the good and the bad here. And I'll just quote from Winks' article here. Quote, Peterson does a lot of things right. He's aggressive on fourth downs, where they rank second, uses play action at a high rate, seventh, and lets his running backs find space by rushing to the outside, where they rank third, and from shotgun, where they ranked eighth. Still, there's room for some improvement. Of course, the Eagles' receivers' injuries affected this last year, but Philly shouldn't have been 31st in pass rate while trailing in 2019. Nor should they have been using pre-snap motion at the 26th highest rate. With more speed at receiver, Peterson could increase the Eagles' rankings in both metrics, which would vault them into tier one next offseason, end quote. And I pretty much agree with this. Ben, this is something that we talked about throughout the season, and this happened before like the big rash of injuries hit. Obviously, DeSean Jackson happened, you know, week after week one. But even in the early parts of the season where they weren't playing guys like Deontay Burnett, the Eagles were a very run-heavy team in some weird situations.
Wow, Deontay Burnett catching an amazing stray right there. Could have gone with Robert Davis, Shelton Gibson, Greg Ward, though people would have been upset about that. Either way, just poor Deontay Burnett. He caught that deep bomb against the Giants, man. Leave him alone. Good kid.
Yeah, but obviously it was something that surprised us. So it's not just the receivers. So when you're looking at what you want to see from the Eagles, I mean, this is something that we talked about before too. Adding pre-snap motion to give information to Carson Wentz before the snap as far as coverage indicators and things like that is definitely something that's high on the list. Ben, any takeaways from this whole glut of information I just threw at you?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I'd like to open up with is the acknowledgement that Hayden, who's a really good writer, really good follow, and is an important guy to follow, that he makes in the top, which is this paragraph that he has before he lists the guys. He says, I have to point out one more thing before we get to the rankings. There's a massive difference between an offense actually using analytics versus just having a scheme that's correlated with analytics, because there is a bit of like a circuitous logic here, which is that like the analytics likes things that in general give you more value per play, and they give you more value per play because they're more likely to win, and they make you more likely to win. And so the winningest coaches are also trying to, you know, like the best coaches are also trying to win a lot of games. And so they're going to do the things that they believe it makes them most likely to win the game, which means bring the most value per play, which means it's supported by analytics. So it's a little bit like the top of this list is like John Harbaugh, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Sean McVay, Sean Payton, Doug Peterson. If you asked somebody who was not an analytics guy to be like, hey, list the best coaches in the NFL, like, you'd get a lot of these guys, right? And then you also get like Pete Carroll, who's 30th, who we acknowledge, right? Like, isn't great. But it is to say, there's a little bit of a vicious circle that happens here. How much is Sean McVay doing analytics, and how much is Sean McVay just doing what has worked in the West Coast offense that he's been taught? Because, right, like, that front office sucks at analytics. That front, yep, office was like, let's give a ton of money to Jared Goff and Todd Gurley, which analytics would not be, it's a bad idea, bad, right? Yep. So a little bit there that's like tricky to work around.
And like the easiest thing you can do to leverage analytics is fourth down aggressiveness, where, like I said, McVay ranks horribly.
Yeah, right. I think that's what's most interesting, because like it's the categories that Peterson's good in. So like fourth down aggressiveness, play action rate, he's really, really good at, right? And I think that those are the two biggest things, right? And then you look at downfield pass rate on early downs. And the Eagles are 10th in pass rate on early downs and 23rd on downfield pass rate. I would bet with better wide receivers, both of those are higher. I'd be very confident. That's the one thing with Peterson is like last year we were like, why is he running it so much on first and 10? Like, what are we doing? Like second and 10, he's just out here running the football. And it's just like, this makes no sense relative to the guy that we know, which just wants to throw the ball around the field. If you look at Andy, like Andy's first in pass rate on early downs and 6th in downfield pass rate, right? There's no reason for Peterson to be as low as he is in both those categories, if not for the fact that just the Eagles did not have the wide receivers to leave Carson Wentz in the pocket and try to get downfield passes. So there's that. So that category is the one where I think with better wide receivers, that solves that problem. Which brings us to pass rate while trailing, in which he was 31st, which is
gross.
Nuts to me.
Right.
That's crazy.
Insane.
I don't even know. Like, to me, what? Like, wide receiver doesn't excuse that.
Right.
Don't really care if you have a wide receiver. You got to be out here throwing the football when you're losing, right? And the Eagles had so many games in which they were down multiple possessions and like eked back into it just at the end of the game to make it a one possession game. And it's like, what could have happened if they went a little bit faster paced? Which anybody who follows me on Twitter, whenever I tweet out my halftime thoughts, knows that my solution for the offense every single time is let's go some more no huddle, right? Because I just pace solves a lot of problems. So that's the one that stands out to me that I'm very confused about with Doug. The other one that's very interesting to me is that the Eagles are 3rd in outside run rate. I would not have guessed that at all. I would have guessed in the middle of the pack. Because this, like, the Eagles do not use the wide zone offense the way that other teams in the league have been using it and been trying to steal it and been trying to incorporate it into their offensive system. The Eagles have not to this point. They might this year.
Their outside run game is more like pin pull stuff to get to the edges, right? Instead of like the outside zone.
Pin pull stuff. And then also I would guess like a lot of their RPO stuff becomes outside runs, because like if you're crashing with your, you know, if you're double teaming backside guard, backside tackle, and then just pulling, you know, like Samalo, right? Guard kick out block, right? And you're not having him go more than 1 yard beyond, and they tag that with like a slant behind it. Like, to me, I would guess that sometimes that becomes an outside run. They also like did more, a little bit more like pitches and stuff with Sanders, you know, like a little more optiony stuff as well. But like not enough that I would have guessed that they would have been 3rd in outside run rate. So that's surprising to me. That one's surprising to me. So the two that stood out to me were the really good in outside run rate, which I did not think they were going to be, which we should say the reason that that's analytically support is just there's obviously more space on the outside, and so you're more likely an explosive run when you're running off tackle than between the tackles. You have to get the blocking scheme exactly right, which is tough, and then pass rate while trailing being so low is surprising to me. So those are the two areas that stood out. Everything else was kind of like what I expected for 2019.
Yeah, and I expect 2020 to them to involve some more pre-snap motion. I was just looking at the list and I noticed, you know, if there's any case for analytics, look at 31st and 32nd. It's the Jaguars and it's Washington, two of the teams that are most likely to win 0 games per Vegas odds.
And that's what it is. It's just like, you know, like the good coaches are at the top and the bottom coaches are at, the worst coaches are at the bottom. And that's a little bit because the good coaches use analytics, but it's also a little bit because the good coaches are just good coaches, right? You know what I mean? Like again, like McVay, like even like Andy a little bit, where it's like Andy's always been nuts about passing. Are we sure it's because the analytics department? I think it's because Andy's always just been nuts about passing. And if Andy is like intuitively believed that's how he's more likely to win football games, all the power to you. All analytics is doing is using data to tell us algorithmically what's better for us for winning. A good coach is able to intuit
right,
infer those ideas before it even gets put in the data, right? So that, you know, all the more power to Andy. It's not to say he's not a smart dude. I'm just saying, like, I don't think Andy needed nerds to be like, yo, throw the football. I think Andy was always like, listen, brother, we're about to chuck this pill around the yard a little bit.
Right. Like, he likes six different cheeses in his mac and cheese, and then the analytics came out and said that, you know, six is a great number for mac and cheese. And he's just like, yeah, like, that's just how it is. But, he, like, even, like, the good coaches, like you mentioned, Pete Carroll, they could, the Seahawks come in 30th. But the Seahawks really could be in a better situation if they leveraged analytics more, because they're always in these games that they shouldn't be in. And if they're getting these small advantages, they're just passing them up. And that's why I think they're in these weird tight games, like a one score game with the McCown led Eagles. You know,
if they were to just Bengals in week two nearly beat the Seahawks, and the Bengals end up with the first overall pick, and the Seahawks are like an NFC divisional round team. And it's like, why? And this is what it is, like, they need to leverage analytics more. So the Ravens, the analytics tell them your running game is really, really, really good. It's much better than all the running games. And some of the reason why is because of the other stuff the Ravens do. Seth Walder of ESPN, I believe it is, it might be somebody else, has a little graph out of, like, the percentage of snaps on which a team used pre-snap motion. And it's like, yeah, it is Seth Walder. And there's, you know, 36 teams that used it between 0 and 5% of the time, 45 teams used it between 5 and 10% of the time, 6 teams between 10 and 15, 8 teams between 15 and 20, and then there's one team between 35 and 40% of their snaps, and it's the 2019 Ravens, right? Yeah. So the offense, the running game, which analytics typically says you need to run less and pass more because passing is more efficient than running, more likely to score on a drive. The analytics also says pre-snap motion helps on almost every play. And so the Ravens use a lot of pre-snap motion, and it helps open up their running game. With Lamar Jackson considered, they have like three of the top 15 EPA runners in the league or something like that on their roster, right? So the running game has become extremely good for them. So the analytics is very fine with the Ravens running the football in a lot of situations in which they would not want other teams to run the football because of the success of their running team. They're running, which is to say, Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, who also want to run the football, do not have the same effective running game that the Ravens do. And So, again, this is what the analytics, they have to listen more to analytics. What's analytics saying? Analytics is just saying, take that at which you're efficient and do it more. It's just saying, this is what you're good at, now do it. The Seahawks, for 10 years, have been good at throwing the ball with Russell Wilson. It's that they don't do it enough. It's that they want to do it more. And so this is, you know, people say, like, the Seahawks have been a good team for the last 10 years. Yes!
Yep.
In spite of.
Right.
Regardless of overcoming the fact that they don't do what they're good at, what's making them win games, enough. And so what Andy Reid intuits, I should pass the ball more, Pete Carroll is blind to. Pete Carroll, I'm winning the game because I'm establishing the run. Really? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like because Russell Wilson is supremely talented, and you should give him the opportunity to be supremely talented more. And then people go into play style things. Oh, Russell's the sort of quarterback who needs a running game. What does this mean?
What does this mean?
English, like, there are things that cannot be captured by analytics. I'm very much so like, momentum is a thing, and like, it's very hard to capture it, whatever. You can't be like, Russ is the sort of quarterback that needs a running game. I don't even know where to begin. Like, identifying the traits and proving that concept. So this is just, it's chada. It's nonsense. It's just total, it's like, it's just, you're talking out of your butt. Just stop it. Russ is a good quarterback. Let Russ cook is the moral of the story. So Alex says, do what you're good at. Do what is effective. The coaches who naturally do what they're effective are good coaches. The coaches who listen to nerds who tell them to do things that are more effective are really good coaches. John Harbaugh is the bomb. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
If you're wondering who else and where else the NFC East ranks in this, the Giants are 26. Obviously, they are under a new coach, not new management. They've got some new computer folk, though. And then also the Cowboys were 8th with new offensive coordinator Kellen Moore, further cementing his status as a pretty doggone good quarterback and offensive coordinator for that offense that they definitely should have kept and did keep, to the detriment of the Eagles, unfortunately. Ben, any other thoughts on this, or any other thoughts in general before we hit the old dusty trail?
People have been talking about 12 personnel today.
Have they?
Yeah. Doug Farrar, who writes for the Touchdown Wire, I believe, had a tweet where he was like, not only is nickel played more often league-wide than base, but also dime is played more league-wide than base, right?
Yeah.
Cool. But no, but like, this is always like, so like, oh, so do this and do that, and then you should run this, you should try to do that and get that against this. Play matchups, win matchups. You play Dime against the Eagles, they're going to beat you out of 12 personnel.
It's just Packers know it.
That I want the artwork for our podcast to change from the BGN logo and to just instead be in like big red letters, matchups, not scheme. Talent.
Yeah.
Right? It's matchups. It's just matchups. Dime personnel. Listen, Malcolm Jenkins is a linebacker. He's not a safety. Like, I don't know what you want from me. Matchups, right. Not personnel. Anyway, thanks for coming. That's the show. Good job.
I've always had issues charting the Eagles defense recently because of what they do with their safeties. And Avante Maddox is like, do you mark it as like big dime or is it dime? Like what is it?
You can't
like
mark you said, any personnel matter. Package that Avante Maddox is in as big.
Exactly, that's what I mean. But is he technically a safety? Yeah. Is he in a safety role? It's weird. But like also like you said with matchups. You know, the Packers tried to run dime against the Eagles the entire game and they got the ball shoved down their throat. And that's where it makes sense to run more 12. You know, if you're running a team that's running base all the time, why wouldn't you run 11 personnel against them and stretch them out and, you know, out athlete them? So definitely matchups matter and come into play with that week to week thing. That's why Belichick is so good at what he does in leveraging the analytics to exploit those matchups. Right. Anyway, that was a weird callback.
Just it's draft. No. Draft guys are really good, period.
Yeah.
Draft a guy who's extremely good against the run and only play him on two downs at linebacker. Draft a guy who's extremely good in man coverage and play him at three downs at outside corner. But once you start talking about safeties, about overhangs, about nickel corners, boy better be good against the pass and good against the run. Boy better be able to play zone and man against multiple body types. Because if you put out six true defensive backs, the NFL will run the football down your throat. If you put out three true linebackers, the NFL will pass the football over your defense.
Can you imagine three TJ Edwards out there trying to cover the pass?
It's just like this is matchups with the prevalence of the RPO, with the ability for quarterbacks to check at the line of scrimmage, with matchup nightmare with tight ends being such a huge part of the receiving game, with running backs being such a huge part of the receiving game. You cannot play a structured defense anymore. You have to be able to muddy the lines. And if not, we're going to beat you up and down the yard. Shout out Greg Williams.
Ben, that'll do it for the Kissed and Solak show. Would you say goodbye to the gentle, gentle listeners?
Yeah, guys. Thank you as always for listening to the Kissed and Solak show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you swinging by. This was the DeSean Jackson, Raheem Mostert analytics podcast. Three things that go together, just like peanut butter, jelly, and bread.
Other kind of jelly.
Bread.
Yeah, bread. There you go.
Your mouth, I guess. Yeah. You know, other famous trios. But no, this was everything that's happening at Eagles News up to this point. As we were recording this today, more of Tom Pelissero and Albert Breer sharing the limits on jersey swaps and the limits on post-game interaction and how the bench system is going to work as the NFL continues to publicize their plans for dealing with a coronavirus season. And obviously at Bleeding Green Nation, despite the fact that we don't have training camp to attend, despite the fact that we may not have preseason games to cover, we continue to cover everything that is happening in the league and in Eagles news for you. So if you're not subscribed to the podcast feed, please go ahead and click that button on whatever app you listen to your podcast. If you enjoy the shows, please go ahead and leave a 5-star rating and a review wherever you listen to your podcast. He's been Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL KSD. I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's Solak. God knows what's going to happen next, fellas. So just whenever there's a podcast to be had, there'll be a podcast and it'll be good.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.